Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
And welcome to a crisis episode of Odds Law with FitzDaz, the show that uses the odds to bring you the stories behind the sport. I'm Lola Katz-Roberts, your host for today's show, and I'm joined on the panel by Ian McIntosh to talk about what is normally my favourite topic, but at the moment is making me very, 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 very... How long is she going to go on for?
That was 7 verys.
6 hours later, very sad. We'll also hear from FitzDaz ambassador and the only one in our number who actually had a good weekend, and that's Ben Pauling, as he reflects on his stable star, the Jukebox Man's excellent performance at Haydock on Saturday, and gives us an update on all his runners ahead of the Hennessy meeting at Newbury this weekend. Ian thought I needed some therapy, so we're here on the sofa to talk about what on earth is going on with this Liverpool side and what the odds and stats are telling us about whether Arne Slot is the right man to fix this mess.
I can't believe we've got there already.
I can't believe I just said that.
Yeah, you just don't have to go back very far, and it's Arne Slot on the pitch and the title's been won, and he's the first Liverpool manager to win the title in his debut season since Dalglish, and everything's wonderful. Then there's a summer, there's 450 million quid. There's a plucky little podcast called Route One asking questions of people saying, are they buying too many players? Are they making too much change? But broadly speaking, you're all okay. In fact, by the end of August, you beat Arsenal at Anfield. And people are saying, well, that's it. It's a battle for second place. I cannot ever recall seeing the wheels come off what looked like a sports car so quickly and in such emphatic fashion. So I guess really the question is, are you okay? But this must be awful for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first time since 1965 that we've ever lost 2 games consecutively to 3 or more goals. Because of the international break, it does lose its shock value a bit, but like, 3-0 twice in a row.
Yeah. See, I'm a Southend fan. This happens all the time, so I'm used to it. But for someone who's never really experienced this, it must be genuinely horrifying.
Well, I did say to you earlier, I've experienced the dark days of Roy Hodgson. Then you told me that the dark days of Roy Hodgson were not this dark.
No, marginally brighter. Only marginally, in fairness.
Well, yeah, I mean, you set the tone, really, by saying that after Liverpool beat Arsenal in August, everyone fancied us to retain the title, a short 7-4 there, and now that price has gone out to 20-1. It's hard for me. I can't speak objectively on this, as you know, but I have some thoughts about where things were for Liverpool when the run began and the fine margins and where Liverpool find themselves now. But, you know, how do you see it from the outside?
I think it's easier when I don't support Liverpool. I don't support a Premier League club. I've got no dog in this fight. And it's easier to be objective in those instances. And I could see things from the Community Shield, the way that they were using their fullbacks to move into midfield and leaving great big acres of space. And Crystal Palace and Glasner in particular were smart enough to take advantage. And I remember saying through that opening run, Liverpool had won 4 from 4. They really could have drawn 4 from 4. It was that simple to see those games going away. Liverpool have been there to be got at since the season started. And slowly it sort of filtered through that this is how you do it. This is how you take them down. But I don't think it's simple enough that it's just about fullbacks. You obviously have the Diogo Jota issue. That's a huge thing for a group of young men, many of whom won't ever have experienced even the death of a grandparent. They're in their early 20s. So to have a close friend in that way would have been absolutely awful. I do think we're guilty of underestimating that, but there are other things as well. There were so many changes to the dressing room. You've got new people coming in. You've got characters who've been there for years moving out. That creates a chemistry issue as well as people get used to each other. And yeah, some of the football's been really, really bad. The pursuit of Alexander Isak all the way through the summer and his way of dealing with that vis-a-vis effectively going on strike meant that you paid 125 million quid for someone who just wasn't ready to play football and is still playing catch up.
You did say to me earlier, you think he might end up being pound for pound the worst. Was it the worst signing in history? Do you stand by that?
So Manchester United paid £90 million for Antony, and I think somewhere in the region of £200,000 a week. And through his entire period at the club, and it should be said he's doing really well at Real Betis. I mean, he got sent off at the weekend, but generally he's doing really well at Real Betis. So he's not a bad player. But in terms of the money expended for the product given, I don't think anyone has been pound for pound as bad as Antony. However, Alexander Isak is showing a little bit of potential. You do have to be careful with this. Luka Modric, one of the best players of the last 20 years, was nowhere near the level required for his first 6 months at Tottenham. Didier Drogba took at least 12 months to settle into life in the English Premier League. I mean, less of a kind of, bad to good, but yeah, he didn't start off well and he finished off
better. Bad to good to very good to extremely bad.
For 125 million, you need to be a generational talent to justify, and whatever his wage is, which is probably going to be north of £300,000 a week, you need to be one of the best strikers in the league. Right now, I haven't been through his stats with a fine tooth comb, but there's probably a good argument he's one of the worst strikers in the Premier League. All of these things coming at the same time, because here's the thing, and I know you're obviously a partisan Liverpool fan, but anyone who's listening, it's not all terrible. Liverpool are creating chances. Their XG is actually quite
highest XG in open play before this weekend.
Yeah. So they are getting a bit of bad luck as well, but it just seems to be death by a thousand cuts with Liverpool this season.
Well, this is the thing. I could do a whole podcast myself for many hours about the footballing reasons and the non-footballing reasons that are going wrong. But I think the thing that is giving me pause when it comes to writing off this Liverpool team is this weirdness that you've alluded to, this statistical weirdness. Liverpool have won every league game this season in which they've scored first. That's six league games in which they've scored first and lost every league game in which they haven't. So, 1-0, 0-1 is deciding the scoreline for Liverpool. And they're winning the XG war, as you said, especially the non-penalty XG war. And I know there are going to be people in tinfoil hats who come for me and say that, XG is not, Jay Bosroyd said on Sky Sports, so the XG is rubbish. Well, it's not rubbish. It tells a certain part of the story. With 32 minutes gone against Nottingham Forest, the XG read 1.09 in favour of Liverpool to 0.08 to Nottingham Forest. So tell me again, I'm asking for objectivity here. What happened?
Well, XG is mostly useless for just dealing with one single game. Over the course of a season, it can get quite interesting because these things level themselves out. Goalmouth scrambles, for example, tend to accumulate quite a high amount of XG in a short space of time. Bournemouth got 3.49 XG in a single half against West Ham, which brilliantly was 40% of all the XG generated by Burnley this season as a whole. So it can be misleading in the short term. But what is clear is that this is not a team that's forgotten how to make chances, maybe forgotten how to convert chances, but that's not where the problem is. The problem has been dealing with this new look Liverpool, and whether that is the case of both fullbacks moving into the middle, or whether it's a case of starting the season with a number 10, or with new personnel, or with missing old personnel, it's a combination of all of that that's taken a unit that had been together under Jurgen Klopp for a long period of time and were very carefully and shrewdly managed by Arne Slot to really just dial down the pace a little bit, not overcommit to every counter-attack. And that worked really well. And so Arne Slot really didn't change too much. If that sounds like I'm damning him with faint praise, it's not meant to. Sometimes the smartest thing in the world is to not really do it very much and not disrupt it. But all of those changes have just led to growing uncertainty to the point now the mental fragility in the players is so on display, and the looks on the faces of everyone when Forest scored straight after half-time at the weekend. It sort of went beyond shock, and it went into a kind of they don't know what they're doing wrong. They don't know why it won't get better. And that's a look shared by Arne Slot as well.
That's the thing, you know, it's this kind of monstrous collision of on and off field factors, and that's what's making it, you know, very difficult to assess, even from the outside, I imagine. But I want to kind of hone in on this 20-1 price to win the Premier League, because I'll be brutally honest here, wearing my reddest of red tinted glasses, I'd say this weekend I probably gave up on hope of retaining the Premier League title. But such are the strange statistics underpinning this Liverpool team and my belief. You know, the team sheet dropped on Saturday and I'm looking at it thinking, oh my God, I can't believe Alexander Isak plays for Liverpool. I still feel like a kid when I see Wirtz's name on the team sheet, Isak's name on the team sheet. So, you know, I don't think there can be doubt about whether the players are good. I don't think there's doubt about whether the manager is good. So in basic terms, you know, it feels mad that within the space of, you know, it was beginning of October, Liverpool was 7-4 to win the Premier League. And now we're sitting here at the end of November and it's 20-1. So let's just look at those weird stats that I was talking about. In 2020-21, Udinese set a new record, losing 5 league games in which they generated at least 2 non-penalty expected goals. And that was as many as any team in Europe in the previous 8 seasons. That was a whole season, that record. The loss against Forest took Liverpool to 4 matches like that in one season. 4 matches. That was our 3rd defeat with a non-penalty XG advantage of at least 0.6. I mean, that's just so strange. I can't, you know, Liverpool are not as bad as the stats are telling us. But on the one hand, they are. They're failing the eye test with you. You're hating what we're doing with the fullbacks. The players are looking miserable for, you know, some bigger reasons off the pitch. And everything seems to be going wrong. But are we really as bad as 20-1? Are Liverpool doomed in the title race?
I think historically, certainly in the last 20 Premier League, 6 defeats is the most that anyone's ever had and still won the title. So to have 6 defeats by the end of November, it's asking a lot for the back end of the season to get through that far. So yeah, this weekend was also the weekend that, and I've been very, you know, generally very supportive and far-sighted, I think, I hope, about Liverpool in saying, like, you cannot freak out and panic this early in the season. You get beaten by Chelsea, you get beaten by Manchester United, you get beaten by Manchester City. These are good football clubs. Well, maybe less so Manchester United, but these are football clubs that have spent an enormous amount of money on players. So sometimes you do lose to those teams and it just happens. Losing 3-0 at home to Nottingham Forest is not a thing that just happens. Mm. So we have definitely moved to another level, but you still have a squad full of incredibly talented and young footballers as well. There's a lot of learnings to be taken from this. I realise that Liverpool fans and probably Liverpool players will be in no mood for that kind of language. But if they do get through this, and it's well worth taking a look at their fixtures, they have a very comfortable run of fixtures to take them into New Year's Eve. If they get through this and they get themselves back in track, look above them in the table. Chelsea are second. If you've watched Chelsea this season more than twice, you'll know that Chelsea are not title contenders. They're not that good. Tottenham are above them, and we just saw them get their pants pulled down by Arsenal. I can't see them catching Arsenal. I think Arsenal are pretty much complete in terms of title frontrunners. They're not going to catch them, but there's no reason why they can't go into New Year back in contention for a Champions League place.
Well, I'd like to pick up on what you just said there about Arsenal, who are now 4-9 to win the Premier League after that North London derby win, which I heard far more of than I would have wanted, despite the fact the shutters were down and I had my noise cancelling headphones.
This is because you live right next door to the Emirates,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, correct.
That
important
must be
context,
fun, right?
I wasn't just standing outside the stadium. But from a horse racing perspective, which is, you know, part of my job working at Fitzdare as a bookmaker, I look at 4-9 and I think, dead sir, you know, that's the price of a, and this is going to be words that you don't understand, but just
yeah,
smile,
I've already got
smile,
a bit of a nosebleed, but I'm going with it.
That would be like the price of a Willie Mullins hot pot at Cheltenham or something.
That
like
sounds delicious.
But it's what something that would give you a very secure feeling.
What's 4-9 in real terms?
4-9 is, this might surprise you because it surprised me, is 69%. So
wow.
That is Arsenal in probability terms is 69% likelihood of winning the Premier League. Now, going back to what you just said about completeness and challenges, that doesn't feel as likely as you just made it sound.
No, just short of 70%. That's, you know, it's 2 in 3, isn't it? That's really interesting because, objectively speaking, I look at Arsenal and I see a very well-organised team with a very good manager, a group of young players who have been through adversity and are evidently coming out the other side. Yes, they are better at not conceding than they are at scoring, which is a weird thing to say after they've just done their rivals 4-1, but that is their strength.
The goal shouldn't have been a goal.
Yeah. But they have great control over games. And when you're looking for title winners rather than cup winners, I think you're looking for teams who don't lose as much. They are brilliant. 69% seems a bit low, but then all of this conflicts with my experience of covering them at close quarters through the back end of the Arsene Wenger reign. I don't think anyone who's watched Arsenal for as long as I have, as often as I have, would ever consider them. You know, nothing's done yet. Arsenal have an incredible capacity to blow up. So they were my prediction at the beginning of the season. I obviously still think so right now, but there's a bit of me that can never be comfortable with Arsenal being 4-9.
But I think, you know, we have to allow for the fact that that wiggle room in the price, that 30% wiggle room, that is because of the factors that you've just explained about Arsenal themselves, but it will also be encompassing other teams in the equation. Perhaps even it's as subtle as encompassing the fact of the weirdness of Liverpool, the weirdness of the fact that the champions, there is still hope, not flickering as brightly as it was, but still the hope that this incredible group of players could put it together. And then what I find very interesting is with the run that you've just outlined, so going to West Ham this weekend, PSV midweek, that is the chance to pick up a bit of positive momentum. Liverpool's price to win the Premier League could be halved by the next time we speak, which just shows, as you say, that nothing is done yet.
Well, it's interesting because if you're saying Arsenal are, let's round it up for the ease of my GCSE maths, but 70% and Liverpool at 20-1, I presume is 5%.
Correct, 4.76, but we'll round up.
So where's the rest coming from? Is it all Manchester City or are there just fractions and fractions? It probably is Manchester City. They're a team who've lost 4 games by the end of November, which historically would make it difficult to win the league. It doesn't give them very much wiggle room. Again, you say things like that, it does look really, really good for Arsenal, doesn't it?
Do you want to know my theory?
Go on.
I think this is going to be the weirdest of weird Premier League seasons. I mean, I think it's already heading in that direction. Nottingham Forest, 3 managers already in one season have rocked up at Anfield and beaten Liverpool. There's weirdness all over the league.
Could you imagine Liverpool getting that 5% break and maybe losing 6 or 7 games and winning the title and being a precedent breaker? Because obviously you have, you know, we're all very familiar with Leicester and 5,000-1. We have moments where the odds go completely crazy. Could you see it happening?
Well, yes, I could see us at least in the next few weeks going on a run that means that everyone is feeling much better about the prospect of not losing games of football. But in reality, you know, it's basically a 7-point margin now. We have 7 points flexibility if we want to keep pace with Arsenal, who are going at something like 2.7 points per game, and they're on track for 89 points. And if we want to hit that target, we can afford to drop 7 points in the rest of the season. So when you spell it out like that, it becomes very difficult. But I have seen it with my own eyes in years gone by with a similar group of players go on these winning runs. So I'm not ruling anything out. The point about the odds is, you know, they are allowing for things like this. And, you know, there's equally in the Garden of Branching Paths a scenario in which we go and get beat at West Ham.
It's Liverpool. So what happens is you get a 92 or a 2005 where the league is just gone and written off, but you win a cup.
I mean, I did say to my Liverpool group chat today, I was like, they're out at Wembley, anyone? And that sounds fantastically spoiled. I am aware of that. That sounds fantastically spoiled, but my Airbnb booking in Budapest is not looking, it's just not looking so good at the moment.
No, I think you might be selling that on to someone at some point.
Welcome back. If you'd like to place a bet on any event discussed on this show, it's pretty easy. Just visit fitstairs.com. We have a new app as well as telephone and text betting service. If you give us a call, you can get prices on any markets as well as special bets. It's 020-7851-5407. Or text the office on 07492-882-213. You'll have to be over 18 and please bet responsibly. So let's just round off by talking about Arne Slot, because we talked off air about my feelings about the situation. And I kind of can't believe we're having this conversation because, as you say, you know, it was just 6 months ago that I was weeping in the stands at Anfield and he was singing Jürgen Klopp's name and everything felt perfectly circular. Shankly to Paisley, all of those good things. But he was 16-1 prior to this weekend to be the next manager to be sacked or leave his job. And he has now come into 11-2. That noise says a lot, doesn't it?
Wow, 11-2.
Shortest after Daniel Farke to be the next manager to leave his post. Now, as you say, something fundamental, very fundamental, has gone wrong if you're losing 3-0 at home to Nottingham Forest when you're Liverpool. There is a concern right now for me that Arne Slot does not have the answers, both footballing and non-footballing.
I think I can understand where that concern is coming from. I mean, earlier this afternoon, I was rifling through my Roffins. Which, for any younger listeners, is an archaic form of football encyclopedias, desperately trying to find a run of form worse than Liverpool's 8 defeats in 11 games. I'm delighted to say I actually found one that was close, 2020 to 2021, where Liverpool suddenly lost every defender to injury. They lost 8 in 12 in that run. Then you have to go a really long way back until you get to 98-99, when Liverpool lost 8 in 11. Now, that was the period where Roy Evans and Gerard Houllier were joint managers. Halfway through that, they lost 3-1 at home to Tottenham in the League Cup, and the experiment was over. Roy Evans tearfully leaves. The nearest one to that is 93-94, which you would instantly think that's the end of Graham Souness. And it sort of is, because the first of the 7 in 11 defeats is Bristol City in the FA Cup, which is the moment he goes. The rest are when Roy Evans replaces him. They lose 6 more games after that. They actually end up losing 10 of their next 17.
But none of this sharper, is making me feel better.
No, and the sharper-eared among you will have noticed that there's a connection here, and these three terrible runs have all resulted in Liverpool legends being sacked. Graham Souness, Roy Evans, possibly Arne Slot. For me, I don't think Liverpool are that kind of club. I don't think Liverpool can be that kind of club to win a title and sack the manager just a matter of months afterwards. I also think winning the title earns you a bad season. And if there's one thing that bugs me about football now, it's that we've lost our perspective on the possibility of a bad season coming along. You know, you have a year and your striker gets injured or your goalkeeper gets injured, you're not going to do as well as the last year. Sometimes bad things happen. This could be that.
I know that, you know, there was a lot of furore about FSG spending during the summer, and 450 million spent. They'd never done anything like it before, which is not strictly true when you factor in the transfer window of, I think it was 11-12, where we signed Stuart Downing, Jordan Henderson, Charlie Adam, all for north of 20 million, I think, which was a lot of money at the time. But I do think, you know, and ultimately the manager that season, Kenny Dalglish, who was backed, paid with his job when the results were not there on the pitch. So I know that, you know, you're right to say Liverpool as a football club have not always been the most ruthless when it comes to managers. And we love our managers. Arne Slot is there on the banner with Jürgen Klopp, with Rafa Benitez, with greats of the past as managers who have achieved really significant things. But the owners do, you know, in some ways have precedent for acting, especially when the investment is there. And as I was saying to you off air, you know, Alexander Isak is 20, he's just turned 27. They've spent British transfer record fee on him and Florian Wirtz. And ultimately, you expect return on investment. And it's not up to the guys that do the recruitment to be the ones to make it work on the pitch. They can give you a player that's likely to make it work on the pitch, but it's Slot who's got to get a tune out of them. So someone is going to have to be held responsible ultimately. But to be honest with you, the biggest issue for me is actually non-footballing. It's like, how do you lead a group of young men through the tragedy of Diogo Jota's passing? You know, not everyone is equipped as a leader to deal with situations like that. That there is one person who I do happen to think would be, and he is currently 4-1 to be the next Liverpool manager.
Not going back to Jürgen, come on.
No, I think, look, the reality is, as I was saying, leadership is hard, and this is maybe, you know, a non-footballing decision for FSG.
I can see that, and leadership is hard, but I think you go through these moments to learn and get better. I don't think there's anything that Arne Slot did in the way that he conducted himself after the death of Diogo Jota, which suggests that he isn't equipped. These are hard times, and they are so instructive, and they can develop character and they can develop leadership. To make a change like that halfway through the bad time, if indeed it is halfway through the bad time, I think there's a whole throwing the baby out with the bathwater and last season's Premier League title in something like that. I just don't think there's anything to be gained from that. You talk about earlier periods of ruthlessness, and you're right to do so, because a lot of money was spent under Daglish and Camoli. But FSG didn't get rid of them midway through the season. They didn't get rid of them through that horrible period in March and April, where I remember Tony Barrett writing for the Times saying that the football at Anfield was so bad, but no one wanted to boo because it was Daglish, and you don't boo Daglish.
I mean, we had just won a trophy. So.
Well, League Cup on penalties against a lower league side. But, you know, if they're going to make a change, I think they'll make it at the end of the season. You make a change now, you bring someone in midway through to impose new tactics and new methods of doing things. I don't think that's right. I also think we're just not far enough through the season. Six defeats. Yeah, I'm going to say they're not going to win the title. I don't think that's a particularly bold shout. But the Champions League is still open. And when you look through Liverpool's history, there are seasons when the league goes to pot. In 2005, Rafa Benitez wins the Champions League. I think it's 81 when Liverpool finished fifth. It's the only time they don't finish first and second in about a 20-year period. It's under Bob Paisley. They finish fifth, but they win the European Cup. There's still so much more left to play for. I can understand the doubts, and I can certainly understand the, you know, everything was great when Jurgen was here. But I think it's way too early. I think you're still looking at a proven manager, a squad full of objectively brilliant footballers. These are the anchors of truth you hold to when all the noise is getting horrifying on the outside. I think it's not too big a jump to leap to the end of the season and see Liverpool in fourth, possibly with a League Cup win on penalties.
Can't be the League Cup.
Oh, you're out, aren't you? Possibly an FA Cup win on penalties against a lower league side.
I want to believe all these things. I do. It's timely. We've mentioned Kenny Dalglish's name a lot in this conversation, having just seen Asif Kapadia's documentary about him. Hillsborough is not a tragedy on the scale of Diogo Jota's death, not to compare the things, but, you know, we have to be objective about this. But you watched a man break under the pressure of leading a group of players, of leading a city through a terrible event. And I wonder if the same thing is happening to Arne Slot. There's no shame in it. There's no shame in not being able to lead the group through this period. He's dealing with personal grief himself. And I'm just looking at it. And as you say, there is so much football left to be played in this season. So much football. The football is going to keep happening, regardless of whether those players are ready for it, regardless of whether Arne Slot's ready for it. Yeah, I wonder if something radical needs to happen. But that is the chimp fan brain in me. And I'm willing to admit that.
If it wasn't Klopp, if Klopp said, no, I've done my time there, who would it be? Who would you want?
Rafa Benitez to the end of the season.
Oh, dear God. Well, he'd certainly stop all that inverting the fullbacks and leaving too much space at the back, wouldn't he?
He might play a lovely 4-4-2 with Florian Wirtz as a false nine.
God, be 4-1-4-1 and about three strikers on the bench, sulking.
Let's leave that there. And, you know, hopefully people don't judge me too hard because I'm in a very emotionally raw state, listeners. And after 27 years, New Year's Day racing is finally returning to the iconic Windsor Racecourse, and Fitstairs will be there. Keep an eye out for the Fitstairs Arms on Course and be sure to download our app for a seamless betting experience throughout the day. Prefer to place your bets another way? Our full telephone and text betting service is standing by, so do contact the office and make sure you don't miss a moment of the action. As always, this is for over 18s only, and please gamble responsibly. Let's move on to our crystal ball calls, because that's all looking rather bleak. Maybe our crystal balls will give us some relief. So, Ian, let's start with you. What's in the forecast?
Well, the African Nations is fast approaching. I saw this because I've been so impressed with Sunderland this season. Sunderland lose half their team when this starts. So losing to Fulham at the weekend, really not good for them. But looking at the African Nations itself, I saw Senegal at 6-1. Now, this is Senegal who absolutely blew through their World Cup qualifying group. It's Senegal who beat England 3-1 at Wembley. It's Senegal side with three brilliant players who were probably in their last major tournament in Koulibaly, Jissa Gueye and Sadio Mane. But it's also a team with Malick Diouf, the exciting right back at West Ham, and Ndiaye at Everton, and not one, but two different stars, one at Crystal Palace and one at Tottenham. There's a lot of talent in that team.
Let's move on. Mine is Fulham to beat Spurs on Saturday, and that's 12-5. I would say the mood on Tottenham Twitter post North London derby was fairly mutinous. A lot of anger directed towards Thomas Frank and the way that team was set up. The thing is, I half expected them to nick something because of how their away form's been this season. The home form's been dreadful. And what potentially could happen is that Frank takes the shackles off and sends them to have a go, which I actually think could play into Fulham's hands. So I can really see Fulham getting a win here.
Yeah, it was too soon after Chelsea. The Tottenham-Chelsea game a couple of weeks ago, that's the angriest I've seen Tottenham fans who I've known for years, who are very objective and very used to losing because they've been Tottenham fans for years. But they were furious about that because they couldn't even see what the game plan was, let alone that it wasn't working. You could see what the game plan was at the Emirates. It was three centre-backs and just keep those lines tight. But if you're going to play like that, you can't get breached like that over and over again. And you've got to have something pushing through Arsenal's midfield. You've got to have some runs, some forward passes. There's nothing there. Once they get it out of defence, they look like they don't know what to do.
And it's strange considering the quality of some of the players that they have.
They are missing a lot of people. They're missing Maddison terribly at the moment. And there are problems all over the place as well. Kolo Muani, who's a £100 million striker, Paris Saint-Germain, looks brilliant at international level. He looks like he's never played top-level football right now for Tottenham. He looks absolutely appalling. So it's a really horrible time for Thomas Frank. I think you're right that Thomas Frank needs to take the handbrake off and just go for it and give him a performance. I don't think he will, though.
Interesting times. Tough times, but despite all the adversity, here we remain on our sofa talking about football. Would you say you've comforted me? I wouldn't say so.
Should you not feel comforted with all that you're finishing the top four? God, and there's nothing else I can do here.
No, the only thing that's going to help me at this point is Rafa Benitez ranting about facts and a lovely rigid 4-4-2. Before we go, let's head over to Naunton Downs and catch up with Ben Pauling, with the team in flying form and another big weekend at Newbury on the horizon. Ben, how are things?
Hi, so it was a great weekend last weekend with the Jukebox Man winning the graduation chase up at Haydock, his return from a long layoff and his injury. Couldn't have jumped and travelled any better, and we were delighted to see how he came out. The race has come out very sound and well in himself, and we look forward to the road ahead to King George come Boxing Day. I was also thrilled with handstands. I thought he ran a lovely race, travelled and jumped very well in grade one company. Either didn't stay, but I'd say it wasn't quite right up the home straight. Lugged slightly left. Maybe a drop back in trip for him and targeting the Fleur de Lis. The Fleur de Lis, Fitstairs sponsored chase at Windsor would be his next target, which is great. Looking forward to this weekend. We've got a lovely book of horses around the country. Nice one, Eric, going there. Maiden Hurdley ran well in the bumper at Worcester. Probably won't be good enough to win this, but he's a nice individual. Mambo number 5 will give a good show himself in the novice handicap chase at Newbury on Friday. Won well up at Aintree recently, and we're very happy with him. No questions asked, likely take his place in the John Frankham novice chase at grade 2. He won very well at Ascot. Looks an open contest, looks a competitive race without being too terrifying. With any standouts, I think we'll definitely take our chance with him. Sam Spade will either go for the 2.5 mile or the 3 mile handicap hurdle on Friday. Looking forward to Saturday, I would suggest that Hornaker will run in the Mayor's listed novice hurdle, only finishing 5th or 6th, I think, first time out there, but ridden very softly to try and get her to settle. I'm hoping for a good show from her. She's an horse I like a lot. Wolf Moon will go up to Doncaster. Pick Rock will line up in the Coral Gold Trophy himself. He'll be a lively outsider. He was much better at Wantington last time out, and so we're looking forward to see how he gets on. No doubt it'll be deep waters for him, but I think he's a horse with a big race in him. Leader in the Park will run the Sir Peter O'Sullivan handicap chase over 2.6 miles. He seems in particularly good form, and I can't wait to see him out for his seasonal reappearance. Kalt Brenner will go in the novice hurdle. He made a very favourable impression first time out, winning at Boss Lass. And Personal Ambition will go in the 2.5 mile handicap hurdle. So a lovely bunch of horses to go to Newbury. We've got some nice horses in at Doncaster as well. So it's a weekend we're looking forward to. It's a weekend we always try and target, and this year looks a stronger team as we've produced for a little while.
Thank you very much for listening. That has been Odds Law, a crisis episode of Odds Law that I hope you've enjoyed. The Liverpool fans among you, I hope you found it cathartic. But we will see you next week for more odds, more probability. Next week's going to be a racing episode. We'll be back with our wonderful broker from across the office, Orlando Merrick. So do listen out and we'll see you next week.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Google Gemini's Pro Plan free for 1 year. And use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.